you know, Jonesy, to me, it's like there are two times in a game where a coaching staff has the absolute attention of its players. Once when the game starts coming out of the locker room, two when you start the second half coming out of the locker room. It concerns me when a team has sloppy third quarters. Should I be concerned about that? Or, you know, is this just kind of, you know, maybe Dwayne Casey still trying to figure out exactly what his rotation's going to look like? I mean, he talked yesterday, Jonesy, about, you know, maybe I've got to start different players in the second half.
Yeah, and that's maybe that's something that he will do, Jeff. Look, they're troublesome. They going into the, I guess it was the Atlanta game, they were 23rd in third quarter point differential. It's not good. It just, and it oftentimes, and the two games last week are prime examples where that one quarter or part of one quarter can cost them the game or swing the momentum in a game or give the other team a lift. It happened in New York. It happened in Indiana. It almost happened last night. So it's concerning. No question about it.
Do you have a theory, Paul, about why?
I think it's internal, Stephen. I think it's just the way some of the guys are. They ease into it, and it's, I don't know, it's something that's pervasive. You know, guys are, the mentality is, it's okay, we'll get it going. You know, it's early. There's still lots of time. And they do turn it on because they were number one last year in fourth quarter point differential, hence the term, you know, we the fourth. Mm-hmm. And they were number three going into the game against Atlanta, and then that was kind of a laugher, but I think they sat at number seven last night. So they're good in the fourth quarter. They're good in the other quarters. It's just that sometimes the third quarter is so bad that it costs them the game.
Do you make anything out of the fact that, you know, they've had opportunities so far this season against teams missing key players? And again, I mentioned this to Brent, no Kawhi Leonard with the Spurs, no Kyrie Irving at the Celtics, no John Wall twice with the Wizards. Last night, no Kemba Walker, but they're only 2-3 in those games. Like, I know, small sample size and all that, but from where I am, that reeks of opportunity in a relatively close conference.
Yeah, it does. The John Wall game, that, I mean, Washington came in and outplayed them.
Yes.
San Antonio is San Antonio, regardless of who's in the system. I point to the game where they did have everybody. The Boston game was one shot, and they kind of let a lead go there. But the Golden State game, where they had Golden State down 5 with, you know, what, a minute 45, 2 minutes to go, mm-hmm. and couldn't finish it off. So those are the ones that you look at. I don't buy this, Stephen, that when a guy's out, there's a chance to win. Yeah, there's opportunity, but there's other guys, too, that step up and play well.
Now, we've kicked the Marc Gasol thing around pretty well, Paul, and I know the Grizzlies are now saying they're not going to trade him, or I think somebody said that anyway, that they don't plan on trading him. But, you know, throw in your two cents on, you know, there was this kind of quick consensus that he would be an interesting fit for the Raptors, and then a lot of people saying, well, an interesting fit, except that I'm not sure he advances the cause in terms of what kind of team they're trying to become. Which side of that fence would you be on?
I know a lot of people were kicking the tires on him when he was a free agent. That was a few years ago when he had a few less miles on him. He's a guy whose game's evolved, Stephen. His game has evolved into what looks like the current NBA with his play on the outside, shooting threes, moving the ball, handling the ball as a big guy out top. He was seen as an inside grinder, and now, as I said, his game's transformed and evolved. So I think Marc Gasol would be a good fit anywhere just because of the way he plays right now in the NBA game. The guy's a former Defensive Player of the Year. So, I mean, he's a plug-and-play guy. He fits anywhere. In Toronto, you now start thinking, well, what are we going to give up to get him? And are we creating another hole by, acquiring him? Or are there guys ready to step forward? I mean, clearly Masai Ujiri thought, and as we now know, could see that DeLon Wright, Fred VanVleet, Norman Powell, these guys were ready to step forward into the spotlight when he made the move with Corey Joseph and Damari Carroll and Patrick Patterson and, you know, he had Ibaka. So the cupboard was well stocked and they were ready. So it's just a matter of, you know, what are you willing to give up? And if you create another hole, can you backfill?
I was thinking about this when watching Kyle last night and, you know, seeing how that game finished and seeing when he got his points in particular and, you know, hit some of those threes that were like daggers in the second half. I'm thinking back to last year when there was, you know, sort of the discussion, do you bring Kyle back? You know, do you commit to him? Is he going to want to come back? All that good stuff. And I think, Jonesy, I think it was you. As a matter of fact, I know it was you. We had a conversation. We had an interview on air. And you said, look, if you're talking about instituting culture change or if you're talking about becoming a little more three-point efficient, three-point savvy, it makes no sense to not bring back a guy who's your best three-point shooter. Kyle now is 47% from deep over his last 10 games. But that's just reinforcing, isn't it, how important he is to this team. And I really believe, you know, I'm going to hold my hand up here because I said that I thought culture change couldn't happen in this team until you got buy-in from DeMar. And what I meant by that, quite frankly, is I wanted to see DeMar jack up as many threes as possible. I'm not about that anymore. I think as long as you have Kyle Lowry doing what he's doing, that's buy-in enough. I want DeMar to play his game. I want DeMar to be DeMar. And I think Kyle is a guy that can really make the difference here in culture change, which makes sense, right? Because he's your point guard.
It does. It does. And Stephen, look, I don't think a lot of people are giving Dwayne Casey enough credit for what's going on. Look at it. They are still amongst the leaders in screen and roll scoring as the ball handler and the roll man. So they're still running their screen and roll stuff. DeMar has fallen mightily amongst the ranks of players in ISO scoring. He's moving the ball more, but yet he's still kind of getting his in that same way. But the team's assists are up. They're sixth in the NBA in the hockey assists. The ball movement is better. More guys are involved. So Dwayne's taken, here's the same team, pal, but I want you to play differently.
Right.
Ignore some of the strengths that these guys have and see if you can morph them a bit and change them a bit. And he has. So he's kept the good stuff, changed some of the stuff that needed to be changed. And look, they're 13-7 right now. We just talked about a bunch of games. They could easily be, and I know people would like the if and the but, they could easily be 15-5, 16-4. And we looked at the calendar. There is one Western Conference trip after Christmas. That's
right.
It. Like, everybody's done by December 27th with the exception of the Minnesota Timberwolves. So they've come through all that, the tough part of the road schedule as well, at least in terms of the Western travel. So, I think he deserves a lot more credit than people are willing to give him credit for, and I guess that credit should be shared with, you know, Masai Ujiri and everybody, the people that put their heads together and said, okay, look, we've got these pieces, we got to play a little bit differently, how do we do it but still keep the good stuff? That's what's happening right now.
Well, you know, and Paul, I think, look, it's not a style change for the sake of a style change. It's a style change to be better and to have a better chance to win, especially a better chance to win the East, right? That's why you're doing this. All right. At this stage, do you think, and again, by record, as you said, they could be right there at the top of the conference right now. But are they a better team than they were last year? Do you see this becoming a better team than they were last year? You know, again, when measured in the possibility of, you know, maybe winning the conference, of getting to the finals or getting really close?
Right now, Stephen, they're getting there. I think they will eventually be. But they're not there right now. There are things to clean up. There are things that still need to, within the new style, be tweaked, be fine-tuned. Eventually, yeah, I think they're going to be a better team because they put their mind to it saying, look, we've tried it that way before, and that doesn't work. And people, you know, Raptor fans and people around, pundits around the NBA, lamenting, well, it's Toronto. They just kind of show up in the playoffs. Well, no, I think it's going to be different this year. They may show up and get beat, but they're going to get beat. It looks like they're on a path. If they get beat, they're going to try something different. It's the old adage when what's his name, Bell, invented the telephone and he had all those crumpled up pieces of paper by the waste paper basket. People said, you're wasting your time. He said, no, I'm not. I know those don't work. And that's where the Raptors are now. They know what doesn't work, and they're trying something new.
Why don't you focus a little bit to the Cleveland Cavaliers going for 10 in a row. You know, it looks as if the March, the coronation of the Boston Celtics as the new champions in the Eastern Conference might have to be put on hold a bit. Jonesy, I've been wanting to ask you this because I love talking to you. I like talking to you about anything, but I love talking to you about LeBron James. And there's a lot of talk lately about how LeBron James has kind of adapted his game to the new world of the NBA as well. You know, in particular, improving his three-point shot. Now, part of that, I understand, may be the result of personnel moves. And, you know, no Kyrie Irving. The Cavaliers are a different team. But, yeah, it's just, to me, it's just a subtle reminder that as much as we all agree that LeBron James is the best player in the NBA, I don't know if we really give him enough credit for, at this stage of his career, Jonesy, being able to change. You know, like, it's not as if... This guy's had a track record of success, and for him to change, and I understand part of this is because of an elbow injury and he's had to alter his shooting a bit, but God, for him to be able to do that at this stage of his career is pretty remarkable.
The guy, I mean, I keep saying it, Stephen, look at the other guys in his draft class. They're all done. All those guys are done. They're not playing anymore except for his one buddy in the banana boat, Dwayne Wade, at a high level, and even Wade is kind of riding LeBron's coattails right now.
Mm-hmm.
The guy, as long as that guy is in the league, you tell me somebody that's willing to bet against him, and that's why teams like Toronto or Boston and, you know, Golden State went out and got Durant. It's all to beat him. If you can't beat that guy, then you're not winning. And I don't care who you are. And LeBron, we're going to look back at him as one of the... He's in the discussion. He's in the room as the greatest of all time.
Mm-hmm.
He is there. And people will look at the 6 championships by Michael and think that is the ultimate. And, yeah, in terms of winning, yes. But there are other things that people are going to make an argument for LeBron about. With his playmaking, I mean, just the way he is on the court, the way he's taken so many teams, everywhere he goes, he finds a way to work it out. Nobody's been in the finals as many consecutive years as he has. It's just the guy's an amazing, amazing talent, and you know, we're watching a generational guy. If you're around to see Jack Nicklaus or Tiger Woods or Muhammad Ali or you name all the greatest in any sport, Wayne Gretzky. If you're around to see those guys, well, take a good look because you're around to see LeBron James right now.
Paul, what are they? What do you think they look like when Isaiah Thomas comes back? And is there going to be? There's going to be a period of transition there where it might, you know, the fit night might not be automatic.
But there will be a fit, Brunt. You're right.
Yeah.
It won't be automatic. But Isaiah Thomas, like everybody else, will figure out how to play with LeBron. And primarily, I see Isaiah as a guy that plays the way he does, attacking, scoring. And, you know, last year when LeBron James stood up and said, hey, you know, like, I need a playmaker. I need help here. This is the kind of guy that will help him. When he goes to the bench, they don't necessarily have to worry about, if he's healthy, Isaiah Thomas, where does the scoring come from? You know, now their defense will suffer, but, you know, in terms of the offense, like, who gets the ball? Where's the scoring? What unit do we have on the floor? Isaiah Thomas, if he plays, he's healthy enough to play the way he played last year in Boston, he can look after some of that.